Bishop, the language of existence. Talks on Zen. Given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 9.
Beloved Group 1, Rinzai said, followers of the Tao, I'm talking only about that which is distinctly solitary and bright and is listening to my expounding of the Dharma. This one knows no obstructions and is omnipresent in the three world system, in the 10 directions of space. It can freely and comfortably enter all the different states without being infected by them. In the shortest instant, it will penetrate deeply into the Dharma Dhatu, where it will talk about Buddhas when meeting Buddhas, about patriarchs when meeting patriarchs, about arhats when meeting arhats, and about hungry ghosts when meeting hungry ghosts. It will go to all places and journey to lands where it will convert the living. It has never, even for the time of a thought, strayed from omnipresent purity and cleanness, shining through the 10 directions of space, where myriad things are in the state of suchness. Followers of the Tao, men of ability know only now that fundamentally there is no cause whatever for concern. It is just because you do not understand this that every thought of yours is directed to the pursuit of externals, like one who rejects his own head to look for another. Hence your inability to apply the brake to your thoughts. What this mountain monk is talking about is just an appropriate medicine to cure a particular ailment of the moment, because there is no fixed Dharma. The holder of such a view is a true lever of home and can enjoy himself to the fullest, as if he were spending every day 10,000 ounces of yellow gold on his pleasure.
Manisha. Rinzai has a special place. Just as Bodhidharma has. Bodhidharma introduced Zen from India to China. And Rinzai introduced Zen from China to Japan. These two figures are key figures in creating a whole new approach to reality. You will see at some point is so difficult not to say that this man has certainly seen the original face. He is not philosophizing. Although his words are that of a philosopher, it is a strange fate that when a philosopher turns into the world of Zen, he never shows exactly what Zen is. He goes round about. He does not direct Zen immediately because of his old training. For an ordinary human being who has not been trained in philosophy, it is far more easier to understand Zen. Rinzai was unfortunate in the sense that he was professionally a philosopher. So what can be said in a single sentence? He goes on elaborating around and around. You have to find that single sentence almost in a forest of words. He cannot forget his old habit of conceptualization. He tried his best. This was not the case with Mahakashyapa, who created Zen. He was not a philosopher. He was a very simple, innocent man. And Zen is born out of a laughter that you should never forget. Because Mahakashyapa laughed at the very stupidity of a philosopher asking a question about the ultimate reality. You can ask questions about the relative reality, about the outside world, and you can get answers to all the encyclopedias are full of those answers. But you cannot raise a question about your inner reality. There is no question and no answer. There is absolute silence. No dust is raised. Just a pure, clean sky. What question you can make out of it? Philosophy avoids in a way the inner world, because in the inner world there is no place for philosophy. It talks about God, and it talks about paradise, and it talks about thousand and one things. Just avoiding one thing, yourself, in other words, philosophy is an avoidance of reality, not an inquiry into reality. Rinzai tried his hard to forget the old training of the mind, and once in a while he succeeds. There was no difficulty for Bodhidharma. He never knew any scripture. He never knew any philosophy. He was a pure original man, uncultured, uncultivated, absolutely raw. Zen fits with the original, uncultured, unsophisticated, very well, because Zen is a gesture. All philosophies are linguistic. Zen has a totally different language of the presence of the Master. Of allowing his experience filter in your being, of receiving with joy his song of silence, of being blessed when the Master is showering all his blessings like flowers falling on you with invisible mystery. Zen has to create a totally existential language. Our ordinary language is good enough for theology, for religion, for philosophy, but not for Zen. I will tell you when he goes into his old habits and when he remembers, he comes back to the direct pointing to the truth. Rinzai said, followers of the Tao, now this is from the very beginning, he commits a mistake. Not intentionally. He is a great lover of Buddha and Lao Tzu, of Tao and Dhamma. Dhamma is Buddha's finger pointing to the moon, and Tao is Lao Tzu's finger pointing to the same moon. Only fingers differ. That's why Buddhism never came to a clash with Taoism when it reached in China. This is a rare incident in the history. Whenever one religion comes, there is immediately conflict with the existing religion. Naturally, because their concepts differ. This is the only instance in the whole history where Buddhism reached and was welcomed by the Taoists. It is a phenomenal thing. It is absolutely unique and rare. Do you think Christianity will welcome Hinduism in the same way? Or Hinduism will welcome Mohammedanism in the same way? Or Mohammedanism will welcome Judaism in the same way? They have all been conflicting, arguing, fighting, killing, burning for fictitious concepts which have no evidence of existence at all. This is the only instance in the whole history where the lovers of Tao simply welcomed Bodhidharma, seeing that the finger is different but the moon is the same. And to fight for fingers is absolutely idiotic. They are all pointing to the same moon. Rinzai commits his first mistake because Tao does not allow any followers. You can love. You can live Tao, but you cannot be a follower, because Tao is not an ordinary religion. It is not a church. It has no organized discipline. It is a path a very unique, eccentric people. You cannot fall into the trap of following because there is nothing to follow, no doctrine, no discipline, no special way to reach to the truth. And further on he says that Dhamma is not fixed. Dhamma and Tao are exactly equivalent. If Dhamma is not fixed, how can you follow it? You can follow a thing which is dead and fixed, but Tao is a living phenomenon. It has no scripture. It has only a deep personal intimacy which is handed hand to hand from master to disciple. The same is true of Zen. It is a transmission, invisible to the outsider, because it is a heart meeting to another heart, joining in a dance falling into the same rhythm, you cannot call these people followers. I cannot call my people followers because there is no rules to follow. You are here not to follow a certain doctrine as Christians are in churches. You are here simply to experience your own self. It is easier when there are so many people engaged in the same search of their inner reality. It creates a magnetic field around. In that magnetic field, it is easier for you to relax. It is easier for you not to doubt. It is easier for you to enter into yourself, seeing that so many people are entering. There is no fear. Tao is an energy field which is being transferred from master to disciple. And the moment it is transferred, the disciple becomes a master in his own right. Now he has his own field of energy. Energy is invisible. Only its effects are visible. You can see the light, but you cannot see electricity. Have you ever seen electricity? These lights are just the effects of electricity. Hence, electricity can do thousand and one things, but nobody has ever seen it, and nobody will ever see it. Energy is not something to be seen, but only felt. Have you seen love? You may have seen lovers. Even that is very difficult. But to see love, even you yourself may be in love, you can have a subtle feeling of a great change in your behavior. You walk differently. Your eyes have a different glare. You smile in a more understanding way. You relate with other people with grace. But these are all effects. One can act all these effects without having love at all. I have heard Mullah Nasruddin's wife dragged him to a movie house. And in the picture shown, the hero hugs and kisses the heroine so gracefully, so sweetly, that immediately the wife of Mulla Nasruddin turns over to him, "You never do it to me." Mulla Nasruddin said, "You don't understand. He is paid." "Am I paid?" But the wife was also a rare personality. She said, "Paid or not paid, you don't know that in real life also they are husband and wife." Mulla said, "My God, if in real life also they are husband and wife, then he is a great actor. I can certify he is a great actor." Showing so much sweetness to one's own wife, who has ever heard about it? You can act. People have acted as if they are enlightened. Knowing perfectly well inside that it is just an acting. But followers are not possible. Gautam Buddha is reported to have said, that "Watch me feel me but don't follow me." You have to find your own path alone, and that is a great duty, that your enlightenment will be fresh and virgin, not second hand. There are no followers of Tao, but he is a man of philosophy. Where there are only followers, in Tao, in Zen, in Dhamma, there are only lovers. Love at the highest peak, where you open your heart to the unknown realities, to the unknown invisible mysteries of your own being. It is a trust certainly, but no following. Remember, trust is not a belief. These things I have to remind you again and again. because all your dictionaries are misleading. I have not come across a single dictionary or encyclopedia which is not mixed up and confused about trust and belief. Belief is in a system of thought, and trust is the essence of love. You can trust only a living being. You can believe in a dead scripture. Trust simply means that you have tasted already something and you have heard the call of the Master that come closer, be more intimate. I can show you my inner world in order to help you to see your own inner world. The function of the Master is to provoke a quest in you for your inner treasure. There are no followers of Tao, there are only lovers. Rinzai says, I am talking only about that which is distinctly solitary and bright and is listening to my expounding of the Dharma. This one knows no obstructions and is omnipresent in the three worlds of existence, in the 10 directions of space. It can freely and comfortably enter all the different states without being infected by them. This I call philosophical going round and round. In this whole passage, what he is saying is simply, look into yourself. The reality of your being is as big as all 10 dimensions. Nothing can penetrate it. And nothing can burn it, and nothing can steal it. If Bodhidharma was to say, he would have simply hit you with his sandals, and that was enough. It is you. There is no need to go on talking about it. Why not wake you up directly? In the shortest instant, says Rinzai, it will penetrate deeply into the Dharma Dhatu. Poor fellow cannot forget his philosophy. Now, Dharma Dhatu is simply a philosophical term for saying into your fundamental nature. Rather than saying that enter into your fundamental nature, he brings the word Dharma Dhatu. to the fools, these strange words sound very profound, that the man must be knowing, must be a great Buddha, dharma dhatu. And it does not mean much. It simply means your foundation. Where it will talk about Buddhas, when meeting Buddhas, about patriarchs, when meeting patriarchs, about arhats, when meeting arhats, and about hungry ghosts, when meeting hungry ghosts. Now you can see how philosophy goes on creating great systems of thought and belief. Your very foundation and certainly that is the foundation of all the Buddhas. Your ultimate consciousness is the source of all the Buddhas. A single sentence is enough that you are containing a Buddha within you. And as far as hungry ghosts are concerned, I cannot agree with you. There are hungry people, but hungry ghosts, there is no reason for them to be hungry. They can eat in any restaurant without paying. And they do it. You cannot see them. They can enter anywhere. Locks and doors don't matter. A stupid idea he must have got from his childhood, which is still hanging around, hungry ghosts, to frighten a child, just a ghost is enough, but to make it hungry ghost means beware. A hungry ghost immediately gulps you. One moment you are, and next moment you are gone. I know ghosts, but I have never heard poor ghosts, hungry ghosts. There is no reason for them to be hungry. Just something to frighten children. But Rinzai is carrying his own childhood still. There are no ghosts in the world. But all the religions talk about ghosts. Because their very foundation is dependent on a belief of God. And if people start asking questions about God's existence, they are immediately repressed, that even to disbelieve or doubt for a single moment in God, and you will be in trouble. The ghosts come in the same line. God lives far away. Ghosts live just in the neighborhood. They may be living in your own house. To frighten children, by a God which lives far away, no child is so unintelligent to be afraid. By the time the message reaches to him, the child will think he will see. But first, bring the ice cream from the refrigerator. But hungry ghosts, they may be in the refrigerator itself. Enjoying all your ice cream. But a man like Rinzai talking about hungry ghosts simply shows that even you grow older, the child within you remains. And then he became very learned in his scriptures. So the scriptures and childhood superstitions all got mixed up. And finally he became enlightened. But his whole past is still hanging around like shadows, and when he starts talking about religion, he has to come down to the mind. And the mind is full of those shadows of the past. He says it will go to all places and journey to lands where it will convert the living. It has never, even for the time of a thought, strayed from omnipresent purity and cleanness, shining through the 10 directions of his state, where myriad things are in the state of suchness. Now he is saying something of experience. He knows that your suchness, your nature, your Tao is immortal. And it is all over the cosmos. It is a very difficult job. And I have suffered so much from these people, reading their scriptures. I had to sort out what is their childhood, what is their training, what is their spiritual knowledge, and what is their actual experience. That is very small. And to search in a mountain for a small diamond, it is really difficult. Now what he is saying is true. But still the language is not of Zen. The language is a philosophy. It has never, even for the time of a thought, strayed from omnipresent purity and cleanliness, shining through the 10 directions of space, where myriad things are in the state of suchness. Just a simple sentence that in your suchness you are the whole. This very moment, if you become aware of your suchness, you are not separate from the cosmos, but a small thing. Philosophers tend to make much fuss about it. Philosophy is so much garbage. That it is very easy to forget whether the philosopher has found it or not. Rinzai is counted as a great philosopher in Japanese history of philosophy. He should not be. But his words give the fallacy that he is a philosopher. I want to say that he is a mystic who does not know the language of the mystic. He is a mystic who knows the language of philosophy. And then everything becomes unnecessarily pompous. Again he says, followers of the Tao, men of ability, know only now that fundamentally there is no cause whatever for concern. He is saying a great truth, but again using wrong words. Followers don't exist in the world of the Buddha. Only lovers. Only those who are ready to expose themselves to their very core. Otherwise, what he is saying is significant. Just change followers into lovers of Tao, men of ability, know only now that fundamentally there is no cause whatever for concern. but it has still to be reduced to a more Zen way, to a more Zen language. He is saying when you become a Buddha, you know that there was no cause of concern. Even if you were not a Buddha, there is no cause for concern. Your being not a Buddha is only a small sleep, just a little dream. In the eternity of time, it does not matter that you dreamt for 2 seconds. All our lives are so small in comparison to the eternity that nothing matters. But this is known only to people who have come to suchness, who have come to realization of their center of being. Suddenly, for them nothing matters. All judgments drop. Nobody is good, nobody is bad, nobody is a sinner, and nobody is a saint. All these are different dreams people are having. One person is dreaming that he is a thief. Another person is dreaming that he is a saint. When they will wake up, both will be the same. And the difference of dreams is not much of a difference. Hence, his statement is absolutely correct that man of understanding know perfectly well that there is no reason for concern. It is just because you do not understand this that every thought of yours is directed to the pursuit of externals, like one who rejects his own head to look for another. Hence your inability to apply the breath to your thought. What this mountain monk is talking about is just an appropriate medicine to cure a particular ailment of the moment, because there is no fixed dharma. Now this is something very original that he is saying. There is no fixed dharma. So there is no question of following somebody. It may be right for him to do something, it may not be right for you to do the same thing. Because you are a different individual in a different context, in a different time. You have to find your own truth and act accordingly, not according to anybody else's truth. There is no certainty, stability, permanence in the world of existence. But one thing he forgets or perhaps is not aware, he is saying what this mountain monk is talking about is just an appropriate medicine. To cure a particular ailment of the moment. But on a very lower level, the statement is right. But from the heights of a Buddha, the ailment is as illusory as the medicine. You are suffering from illusion. Certainly you need a cure. But the cure has to be as illusory as your suffering. Otherwise it will disturb rather than help. And once your ailment is cured, you don't carry on the bottle of the medicine with you. You throw it away. The people who go on carrying their scriptures are carrying on medicines prescribed perhaps 5,000 years before to a certain person who was certainly suffering from an illusory ailment. The prescription you are carrying . The time has changed. So much water has gone down the Ganges. You are no more living in the world where Bhagavad Gita had a truth. Our Bible has a truth. The whole world has changed, but you cling to your medicine bottle and you are no more suffering from those ailments. Now the medicine has become your illness. The holder of such a view is a true lover of home and can enjoy himself to the fullest as if he were spending every day 10,000 ounces of yellow gold on his pleasure. It is true that a man of enlightenment lives each moment in such bliss and in such splendor as if he is spending 10,000 ounces of yellow gold on his pleasure. He is not spending a single coin. But what he is saying is that his blissfulness is far bigger than any emperor. He may be a beggar, but his inner silence and his inner peace and his inner dance is far bigger than any Alexander the Great. Rinzai has to be understood with very open eyes. He is carrying all childhood superstitions. He is carrying all that he has learned as a student of philosophy. And he has attained the truth. So when he says something, it is very mixed up. It is not pure 24 karat gold. But it has some truth mixed with some falseness. Studying Rinzai is arduous. You have to sift, but how can you sift unless you know? My own understanding is that people should read scriptures only when they have attained to the truth. In fact, then there is no need. But that is the only right way, because then they can see what is false and what is right and what is superstitious and what is just garbage, and there may be a small truth hidden somewhere. But the problem is those who have attained don't read. And those who read have not attained. I have read much, but I started reading after my attainment. Because before that, I simply refused my philosopher's professors, well-wishers, wanted to read me this book, that book. I said no. Before I had to be absolutely certain about my truth, I don't have any criterion to judge, and I don't want to get confused with all kinds of thoughts. But fortunately, The enlightenment came very early to me. And then reading was absolute joy. Because I could see the false from the true, the fictitious from the real. One of my professors used to say that why you unnecessarily waste your time in reading? Because he has seen my book. I will make comments on my book that this is stupid, this is idiotic, this is nonsense carried from childhood. He said, why you read if you such a great philosopher and you are making such comments? I said, only now I am capable to read. This is a strange world. When you are capable to read, there is no point in reading. And when you are incapable of reading, you read too much. And that goes on creating more confusion in your mind. I have read Rinja. And I have found it is very rare to find such a confused, enlightened master. But he certainly did a great job. Others had to sort it out. But at least he carried the message from China to Japan. Those who followed Rinzai, they dropped his philosophy, they dropped his superstitions, they carried only the pure, clean experience of consciousness. Soon, Rinzai is still worshipped. He has his own school after 1,000 years. But the masters who followed really did a good sorting out. Almost 99% of Rinzai has been dropped. But 1% is so true. That you cannot drop it. But he was not the man to express only that 1%. He made much fuss about it. It would have been far better for him first to forget his philosophy, drop his superstitions, sort out himself what is actually his own experience and give an expression to it. Others have to do this. Laundry job. He left a mess behind him. A master, grandson, in the same lineage of Rinzai, says in a small verse much more than Rinzai's big discourses. Kanzan says, I climbed the road to cold mountain. The road to cold mountain that never ends. The valley are long and strewn with stones. The streams broad and bent with thick grass. The moss is slippery, though no rain has fallen. Fine sigh, but it is not the wind. Who can break from the snares of the world and sit with me among the white clouds? He's saying the road is a non-ending road. Your inner world has no limitations to it, just as the outer universe has no boundaries. Your inner world also has no boundaries. He is simply describing the whole path he has moved through. I climbed the mountain to cold mountain. But as you go deeper, it becomes colder and colder. All the heat is sickness. It is fever. The road to cold mountain that never ends. The valleys are long and strewn with stones. The streams broad and bent with thick grass. The moss is slippery, though no rain has fallen. Of course, inside no rain has ever fallen, but still the path is slippery. The moss is slippery, though no rain has fallen. Fine sigh, but it is not the wind. It is not the wind passing through the pines. It is the pines themselves which are signs. Who can break from the snares of the world and sit with me among the white clouds? That one is my disciple, my devotee. This is the language of Zen. Manisha has asked, beloved Bhagwan, language is usually about the communication or transfer of ideas, and the understanding of most religions seems to be that one does not need to be given something. However, Zen is different in that it appears to be saying one only needs to understand what one already has. Is this why you have called Zen the language of existence? Manisha, you are right. Zen has nothing to give to you, but has something to take away. Your personality, your mask, your false identity, Zen has to rip you off so that only the existence, pure existence, remains unpolluted in you. It does not bother about philosophizing. Its concern is experiencing. Its concern is existential. That's why I have called it the language of existence. All other languages are man's languages. For purposes of the mediocre and for purposes of the marketplaces, Zen is not a marketplace phenomenon. It needs a tremendous courage to enter into one's own existence, leaving everything that one values so much. It does not want you to renounce the world, it simply wants you to renounce yourself and just let the existence express and radiate through you. The Zen master or a Buddha does not speak. He only allows existence to sing his song. The Buddha is just a flute, a bamboo with holes. Existence can sing any song that it wants. The flute does not interfere. The flute allows existence to commune with those who are capable of listening the music that is flowing through it. Rinzai has been a very serious trip. My understanding of Zen is that it is full of laughter and giggling. It is not a serious concern at all. History records many examples of people in restaurants who have found flies in their soup. Professor Dingleberry, a world-famous authority, has run a survey on the international situation. His findings are revealing. In America, if a diner finds a fly in his soup, he sends the dish back and complains to the manager. In English restaurants, the fly is carefully removed between finger and thumb, placed on the table, and then politely ignored for the rest of the meal. In France, the fly finder consumes the soup but pushes the fly to the side of the plate. In Scotland, the fly is lifted forcibly out of the soup and is squeezed over the plate, then dropped to the ground and trodden into the carpet. The Chinese consume the fly with one swallow and then wash it down with the soup. In Jewish restaurants, particularly in New York, the diner immediately sends for the manager and complains, "Is this all I get? Just one fly?" Captain Cartwright, numbnut, the astute commander of the latest electronic miracle battleship, the USS Turkey Suit, proudly scans the horizon for smoke. He is standing on the deck of his observation tower on board ship. The Turkey Suit is floating a few miles from the coast of Florida, and numbnut has just commanded the destruction of a mysterious aircraft flying too nearby. What he does not know is that he has just shot down the latest multi-billion dollar American rocket launched to explore Mars. Captain Numbnut strides proudly up and down the deck, sniffing the salt air and whistling the Turkey Suit battle song to celebrate his uncanny marksmanship. Suddenly an aide comes running up to the captain. "Here is a special message from the Admiral, sir," reports the sailor. "Read it to me, my son," says Numbnut, puffing out his chest and gazing towards the horizon. But sir, says the sailor, it is addressed to you personally. Just read it to me. Snaps back Captain Numbnut. The sailor reads, of all the blundering, stupid, idiotic morons, you take the case. Captain Numbnut shifts his gaze to the sailor and pauses. Then he says, have that decoded at once. Lustiest Miss Willing starts her new job as a waitress in the Goat Burger Cafe. She approaches a table where Kowalski and Zabriskie are sitting after just finishing their meal. She leans over and, cleaning away the plate, asks, what would you gentlemen like for dessert? I would like raisin cake, stammers Zabriskie, noticing her full white breast. Okay, she says, turning to Kowalski and leaning all the way over, exposing her beautiful tits. And is your raisin too? Well, says Kowalski, looking down at the napkin on his neck. Yup, mine is raisin too.
Close your eyes. Feel your body to be completely frozen. Gather all your energy inward. Look almost like an arrow searching deep
for your center of being. Because your center of being is also the center of the universe. One who knows it becomes a Buddha. Deeper and deeper. This moment is precious. You are very close to your own being and to the being of the universe. Realizing it is going to transform your whole life. Without any fear. Because it is your own territory, it is your own space. Nobody can enter here. It has been waiting for you for millions of lives. Just penetrate it. And you will find the greatest blessing showering on you. To make it more clear, Nivedana, let go of the body and the mind. You are just a watcher. The mind may be creating some dust. The body may be feeling uncomfortable. You are simply a watcher. Don't get identified. Because this body will change. This mind will change. 1,000 times they have already changed. Only this watcher is your treasure. It always remains. Eternity to eternity. Allow to count how Buddha calls it Dhamma. whatever the name, this is your pure existence. It opens doors of all the mysteries. Mysteries that you can feel but you cannot say. Mysteries that you can sing, you can dance, you can live, but you cannot say. This is the world of Zen. And experiencing existence is its language. Blessed is this evening. You have all disappeared into an oceanic love, into an oceanic consciousness, dissolving your thin boundaries. Remember this universal experience 24 hours, just like an undercurrent. Remain a Buddha, walking or sitting, sleeping or waking. Now you can come back, but come back not the same as you have gone in. Come back much more solid, much more integrated, much more centered. And then sit silently for a few moments as a Buddha. Celebrate the gathering of 10,000 Buddhas?
Yes,
Baba. Thank you.